The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
Hello, Phillips. You got word for me?
I'm sorry, Brady. Bad news. We're in no position to get her out.
But she's in trouble. Real danger.
Yes, I know she's in trouble. But if she's in their embassy, she's on their territory. And there's nothing I can do.
She's one of the few people in the world who may be able to help me. We've got to get her out of there.
I'm sorry, Brady. I'm under strict orders to keep within the law.
What's the trouble?
Oh, it all started this afternoon. I heard a Professor Porfiri read a paper on allergic polarization.
Uh-huh.
This Porfiri woman understands the problem better than anyone I know. She's one of the top scientists of her country. I've got to work with her.
Then why don't you ask her?
I wish it were that simple. Dear Dr. Porfiri said too much after the lecture.
How do you mean?
Well, in an interview, she said that she would have got further with her experiment if her government gave scientists more freedom.
You mean she criticized her government?
Yes. So they met her outside the hall and rushed her off to the embassy. Simply hijacked her. Diane, what am I going to do? I've got to get her out of there.
Well, why don't you try speaking to them as a private citizen? They might just understand your situation.
All right. I'll call them.
Yes? One moment. Hey, Dr. Peter Brady.
Third Secretary. What can we do for you?
I'd like you to fix a meeting for me with Dr. Porfiri. Nothing political, I assure you. I'd like to talk to her as one scientist to another.
We've both been working on the same scientific problem, and I'd like to have a...
Unfortunately, Comrade Porfiri is indisposed.
Hello. Hello.
You talk too much. And so do you, Comrade Dr. Porfiri. You were also indiscreet a year ago at a conference in Munich. 3 months earlier in Belgrade.
It is not indiscreet to claim our rights as a scientist.
You have no rights. You are a servant of the state.
We only ask to be free to help the state.
All this talk of freedom.
Welcome, everyone. It is Thursday, February the 8th, 2024. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's just right.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Freedom has always been the kind of thing that no one ever notices or that is taken for granted until its absence is felt. And for this reason, freedom has often been compared to the very air we breathe, which we also don't notice or take for granted until our access to it is impeded in some way. Today's discussion is in many ways a continuation of the discussion we embarked on last week, one which, for me, is somewhat uncomfortable given that the objects of my criticism were a lot of good folks ostensibly on the right, who, as I pointed out last week, are completely in the dark about how to restore or recover the freedom we have had taken from us. So to help shine a light into that darkness, I offered some of my own 50 years' worth of experience in the political marketplace, including my involvement with the Freedom Party of Ontario, which has had a remarkable track record of successfully fending off tyranny. Turns out that another Freedom Party has emerged out there to which my attention was drawn over the past week, this one in Alberta, and I find myself this week having to do a lot of damage control given what its founders have been saying, not only about tyranny, but about freedom itself. So let me make it clear from the outset that Alberta's Freedom Party has nothing in common with Ontario's Freedom Party, something you'll understand thoroughly by the end of today's broadcast. But before we dive into all of this talk of freedom, we've got a bit of business to catch up on, particularly as a consequence of my own absence from the show during my month-long stay in the hospital this past November. And some of that catching up includes your feedback comments to our various broadcasts over the past few months, which we will be sharing with you right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback at justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ shortwave. follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Among the people who have contributed to the show over the past few months are Tim B., Douglas C., Mark E., Troy K., Stephen L., Ashley R., Rob S., Murray T., and Kathy V. And between them and among them, their donations to Just Right vary from single donations of $5 to $100, as well as monthly donations ranging from $5 to $200 per month. And you are the folks who have made it possible for us to reach our audiences, and for that, my elusive co-host Robert Vaughn and I are greatly appreciative. And of course, some of these financial supporters, as well as other listeners to this show, have also passed on their feedback comments. So here are a few of them, and I've tried my best to keep them in some kind of chronological order, beginning with this one from a familiar name, Mark Emery, who on December 14th wrote under the subject heading, "Absolutely Terrific Show of December 14th," and of course that was the show about my hospital stay, which was titled "Inhospitable, A Painful Look at the Nature of Pain." And I quote, "Hello, Bob. Listen to your entire December 14th show about your hospitalization. Such a terrific presentation. Really enjoyed it. The concluding discussion about action and emotion was fascinating. In prison, I was still fully engaged except when I was in pain, MRSA symptoms, and that stops all independent thought, as you noted. You sounded great and fully cognizant and healthy, and intelligent, as always. Love the episode. Congratulations on a great show." End quote. Well, thank you, Mark. Very much appreciated. And here's another one. Commentary on the same show, also dated December 14th. This one from Rob S., who wrote, quote, "Great show, Bob, especially the ending. Thank you for sharing. Makes me wonder how Stephen Hawking could remain productive and current. Glad you're back and in fine form." Well, thank you, Rob. This one from Ashley R., who wrote on December 22nd, along with a contribution that was sent, "Thanks for putting out entertaining shows. Merry Christmas and all the best in the new year." And the same to you, Ashley, as belated as this response might be. But you know, part of the whole challenge of putting a show out like this, because a lot of the topics, you've got to admit, are kind of on the dry side, have to make them entertaining. And this is something I don't see enough people doing who I would typify as being on the right side of the so-called imaginary political spectrum. But that's another topic entirely. Now this one from January 12th of this year from Murray T. And under the subject, "What an interesting topic," and he's referring to our show number 842, on which the subject was headed, "Stupidity, Socialism's Moral Defect," and I quote, "Thanks, Bob, for a great show again. Such a fascinating topic. I've been dismayed at the latest trope of just think critically, quote-unquote, that I've been hearing lately, as if this little phrase is supposed to provide some direct path to the truth. It's almost as bad as go to the source. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty much at a loss trying to understand the language of most studies that I look at, and reading the conclusion is often misleading because it often includes the ideology of the writer. Case in point, 10 or 15 years ago when I was learning about the tremendous success of capitalism in improving statistics of severe poverty, I went to the source quoted, which was, I'm pretty sure, worldbank.org, and the data supported what I had read outside the website. You could clearly see a massive improvement in severe poverty starting around the Industrial Revolution, then getting another massive bump from India and China in the 1980s. Yet the conclusion of the authors of the study was to recommend an increase in women's education. There might have been some other suggestions as well, but no mention of individual rights or the Constitution. All that said, I'm often at a loss when trying to provide an answer to the question, how do you know? Or how can I not be stupid? I think much of the answer is in one of the quotes you mentioned, quote, reason is man's only tool for acquiring knowledge, end quote. Anyway, brilliant show. Thanks again. And I hope you're feeling better. And I, along with many listeners, I'm sure, would love to hear an update if you feel like sharing. Otherwise, I won't push, end quote. Well, pushy, pushy, pushy. What is it with you people? Oh, no, you're not pushing. Not at all. In fact, I'm pleased to report that I've gotten the all clear with respect to each of the miscellaneous conditions that they were testing me for. And during the time I spent with the doctor reviewing my case, one little fact of which I was unaware when he was updating me on my status was that during the early part of my month in hospital, I had received, get this, 15 blood transfusions. My last blood count was the best result to date, but the monitoring will no doubt continue well into this year. As for my broken leg, I'm still mostly using a walker, even though I'm now able to walk around again without one. And then Murray had one more question, and I quote, "A quick question. Robert Vaughn and Paul McKeever mentioned that Paul has another book coming out, and it sounded like something I definitely want to read. Any hint of when and where one might be able to buy Paul's book? Take care and thanks again," end quote. Well, Murray, as you might know by now, we announced the February 2nd release of Paul's book at the end of last week's show. And by now, you'll be able to get your copy of Judge, Philosophy and Freedom in the First Person from a number of distributors and in various formats. I expect to have my own copy of his book in my hands by the time this episode airs. And at about 800 pages in length, I should have it pretty much read by this time next year. Just kidding. Looking forward to the read and to talking about the book's unique content with Paul on upcoming episodes of Just Right, hopefully in the coming weeks ahead. This feedback, dated January 15th, from Trevor D. under the subject, Just Right 841 is my fly open for a discussion. Quote, "Hello, Bob. Nothing like your story has ever happened to me that I can remember, and I found it very interesting and entertaining. The broadcast was very well thought out and informative. I enjoyed it," end quote. Well, thank you, Trevor. It was fun doing it, and that was possibly the most offbeat show I've ever done. And even though it focused on my bizarre interactions with a common housefly over a period of a few weeks, I learned a lot from that weird experience, mostly about myself and about how humanity creates narratives and stories from every experience shared with others. But I still think the creepiest moment I experienced was when the fly was perched on a shelf beside my computer monitor on which I was watching a video of that same fly that I had captured. Thankfully, none of it was real, right? This feedback, dated January 18th of this year, from Troy K., who, along with his contribution, added this message. Quote, "Thank you for the thinking," end quote. I gotta tell you, Troy, that comment stopped me cold. You know, that's one of the nicest comments of appreciation I ever recall getting. It actually addresses the part of doing this show that I hate the most. You know, the thinking. But that is what this show is about. And I won't pretend that it's an easy thing to do each week, because I walk into every show never knowing what to expect or how the show will turn out. And that's certainly been my experience since returning from the hospital, let me tell you. And here's another one from Troy, this time dated February the 3rd, on the topic of Politics is Simple, It's Just Not Easy, which was our February 1st broadcast. Quote, "Posts like this are the reason I continue to support. January 2024 BS had almost matched all of 2023. This perspective makes a difference. They're trying to overload us with hundreds of narratives, but only freedom matters. Thank you," end quote. And thank you again, Troy. I thought this would be a great time to share that post with our listeners, since it very much will frame the balance of our discussion for the latter part of today's show. And I quote, "The spectacle of thousands of political protesters gathering to fight tyranny without having a clue as to how this might be done can only lead to continued tyranny ahead. Though accomplished and expert in their own fields of discipline, whether medicine, law, education, journalism, etc., most of the leading voices in the so-called quote-unquote freedom movement are clueless when it comes to the politics of freedom. It's one thing to be able to identify the political condition of tyranny that you're running from. It's quite another to identify the political condition of freedom towards which you must move. Calls for quote-unquote unity or solidarity or political separation or for creating a republic or for changing the electoral system are not calls for establishing a free society. They are desperate, aimless propositions that amount to a clear admission that the protesters really don't know what must be done. This is completely understandable. Most people pay no attention to politics until it's too late. Fortunately, one group that has discovered the fundamental principles necessary to the advancement of individual freedom is the Freedom Party of Ontario, established on January 1, 1984. A brief review of the party's myriad of successes in changing and affecting the laws of Ontario makes two things clear. One, that winning individual battles against the deep state and the political parties of the day is doable, if one employs the proper principles and tactics. And two, that Canada's tyranny today is no different than it has been for the past half century and longer. In every respect, municipal, federal, and provincial governments in Canada were as abusive of their power and authority in the 1980s as they are today. Protesting against tyranny and oppression certainly has some limited value, but preventing the next wave of tyranny and oppression demands a political discipline currently not seen in the political arena, one for freedom, not merely against the latest manifestations of state injustice. The war for freedom can only be won by those who understand and act on the singular set of freedom-based principles that are just right. End quote. And to that post and that show, I got another response, this one dated February the 1st, from Mark Emery, who wrote, again, great new show. Quote, hi Bob, I listened to the whole show just now on my night job. Excellent. Those speakers for the Coots 4 aren't doing those 4 any favors. Burn it all down? That's the Pol Pot solution. The speakers on behalf of the Coots 4 do a disservice to the men held in custody. Both of them, and he's speaking of Arthur Pawlowski and Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, were dead wrong in analysis, recommendations, and rhetoric. No positive vision in any of it, as you inferred. Under the circumstances of our political times and within the limitations of our current governments, Danielle Smith is doing an admirable job as premier. It is urgent that BC emulate Smith. I belong to the Conservative Party of BC under leader John Rusted. Good fellow, agree with all their main assertions and positions. Still supporting Max and the PPC, of course, though Polyev's rhetoric is admirable. Thanks for the excellent show and commentary. You're among my must-listen podcasts now. End quote. Thank you, Mark. And this one from John Manley, who has been a guest on this show, who wrote me just this past February 2nd, quote, Bob, have you heard of the United Freedom Party of Alberta? The other night I started listening to an interview with the founders of the United Freedom Party, Luke Dennis and Chris Hampton. I think they have a very clear definition of what freedom means. The ability to act as you choose, as long as you do no harm to others or to the environment. A society based on freedom first would leave everyone free to determine for themselves how best to live their lives, so long as it doesn't infringe on the freedom of others to do the same. That's the safeguard you have in a society based on freedom. It's not divisive at all, but the most inclusive. It upholds the rights of the only true minority, the individual, end quote. And to John I say thank you for the alert on the United Freedom Party of Alberta, but I think you're reading a bit of your own wisdom into the greater message that was expressed during that interview. Now, I recorded an audio track of the entire interview, and I think it will serve as a perfect exhibit of how not to promote individual freedom. And it was very reminiscent of my own mistakes that I made back in my libertarian days in the 1970s, and I spelled days as D-A-Z-E. Regrettably, I could not agree with any of the premises or proposals put forth by the organizers of that party, nor could I agree with their definition of freedom as the ability to act as you choose as long as you do no harm to others or the environment. While I understand and partially support the intended sentiment behind that statement, This is not what freedom is. And to continue to argue a freedom case based on this view is a trap from which it is very difficult to escape. So, without much further ado, why don't we dive right into the essentials of that interview, which was hosted on January 31st of 2024 by Will Dove on his show, The Iron Will Report. And it was shown under the title, Fixing Freedom, How to Un-F Canada.
I've interviewed a number of founders and leaders of new conservative parties, from Maxime Bernier to Pastor Art Pavlowski, current political leaders, to past Canadian conservative politicians such as Preston Manning and Brian Peckford. All are well-intentioned and truly believe that government exists to serve the people. But none have given as much thought to the problems facing our country as my guests today. Luc Denis and Chris Hampton are the founders of the United Freedom Party of Alberta. They are also the authors of the book, The Freedom Handbook, published in 2017. Luc, Chris, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for coming in today and talking about the United Freedom Party. Now, obviously, before we get into anything too deep, we should tell people, well, what is the UFP? What is the United Freedom Party? What is your platform? And why did you start yet another political party? And because there are now several independent parties in Alberta. Why would you start this? What's your platform?
The world, I mean, our country is on the verge of collapse. Anybody who thinks otherwise is delusional. And the United Freedom Party came to, when it does collapse, is some psycho going to, you know, promise a bunch of nonsense and take over again? Or are people going to say, we want something different? And so that was the real purpose of the United Freedom Party. Because Chris has always said, well, you know, nobody's ever voted in freedom. So then my thoughts were, if it does collapse, then maybe people will see what we publicly stated, how our government could run with freedom in mind. The majority have to be told what to do because they'll go along with any nonsense that's promised them. That's not the people we're talking to. We're talking to people with jobs, people with families, people with businesses who want a better future.
So how do you define freedom, gentlemen? Because and there's people who think it means, well, you should be able to do anything you want. That's not freedom. That's anarchy. Obviously, there do have to be controls. There are some things that just about all decent people will agree should not be allowed. You know, you can't put child porn or snuff films up on social media, for example. What is your definition of freedom?
Well, that's a big question. You know, over simply, I think that freedom is the right, of course, as an individual to govern your own decisions, lest they cause harm. And you don't need, you know, endless rules which just keep compounding into, you know, endless books and streams that you can never catch up on. We don't need that. You don't even need to write a rule down, as we stated in the legal chapter of the Freedom Handbook, which we wrote, you know, near 10 years ago before the Freedom Party, which was designed to wake up everybody from your grandmother, you might not know, and also be a great read for freedom fighters like Luc and I and yourself. I think freedom boils down to, again, that right to choose for yourself, lest, of course, your decisions cause harm. And everybody knows what that looks like. And the minute that you write a rule down, when I say that we don't need written rules, that sounds, you know, even scarier than no health care or pension. But think about it. The minute we write a rule down, there's always going to be an exception. So, you know, if we're asking ourselves what freedom is, I think it's the right as a human being and an individual, again, to make your own decisions, unless they cause harm. And if that's the case, if there's a man or a woman in the community or the community itself stands up and says, you know, these actions are causing harm to property or body somewhere, then that's a natural case for the court. And it should be governed by the same precedents and so on that have built our societies, which I think we can trust that we're going to do. So from policing to building the roads to protecting against, you know, fascism and the corporatocracy getting out of control or whatever have you, whatever end of that freedom equation you want to challenge, I think we can give people the right to make their own decisions and to govern themselves and rely firmly on that base understanding that governs the free world right now, as far as we understand it, which is, you know, do as you will, but if you cause legitimate harm to another human being or the environment, we're going to have a chat about that. and you're going to be liable.
And I want to get more into potential policy changes and accountability in a bit, but I want to ask one more question about freedom. Do either of you believe that there is ever a point where a government has a right to violate our charter rights?
Yeah. When you cause egregious harm to someone else,
let me explain the question, because there's nothing in the charter that gives you the right to cause egregious harm to someone else. We're talking about things like security to the person. And by the way, I asked the sole surviving author of the charter, Brian Beckford, about that. And I asked him, does that mean the government can't take away your right to make a living? Does that mean the government can't tell you that you have to be injected with something against your will? He said, absolutely, that's what that means. And of course, there's a number of other charter rights in there as well. And these are supposed to be the highest law of our land, but our governments have been arguing that in the current circumstances, they have a right to violate that. And so what I want to know from both of you, United Freedom Party founders, is there ever a situation that you can imagine in your minds where government should be justified in violating our charter rights?
I was only referring to after you've been convicted of a crime.
Okay.
So you forfeit your right to, many things.
Yes.
Freedom and such. But to your point, no, absolutely not. You're right. If you're not causing harm to others and someone else proposing that your existence is causing harm to others because of some invisible virus, that's lunacy. And if you allow that, then what's the next crazy lunatic idea that's going to come?
Yes. And if I may, on that point, I think the quick answer is no. The government never has a right to infringe on your individual sovereignty, period. Again, the government is there to protect us and organize us as a nation in a very, very minute sense. We, are advocates of the smallest government that the world has ever seen. Freedom's natural next steps forwards. And again, these ideas aren't even ours. We've stole them back through time for 1,000 years or so or more. And there's a lot of people around the world who would agree. You know, if we're going to go back and try and stand tall and firm on our, Canadian charter, on the American Constitution, again, which is subverted back, a long, long time ago, eventually when you go into court against the government as they stand right now in the Western world trying to fight for freedom or anything, you're going to lose at the end of the day, by and large. We might have a small win here, a small win there, this. Again, like Luke said, I don't think we're voting in our freedom. I mean, why did we start a political party when we don't believe you can vote in freedom? That's an interesting question. But I think Luke pointed to the reason at the beginning. I think people need to understand there's another option. And like Luke said, you can't fix stupid, but our message is for shepherds, because the world is full of sheep. I think the Bible uses this language with real purpose. There are a lot of sheep in the world, and there are a lot of shepherds, and we all play varying roles at different times. We might be a shepherd on one issue and a bit more sheepish in another. That's fine. But, the only way to forge a new road, and that's what we're talking about, because if we wait for things to be handed to, we can't vote in freedom. Tucker Carlson's not our savior, nor is Douglas Murray across the pond. All these fantastic people spouting good ideas, I'd venture to say most of it's controlled opposition. And if the real humans on the planet want to stand up and make freedom, it's freedom is on the march, that's for sure. But if we're going to take it somewhere, take a stand and make it last and make it right, then we're going to have to stand up as shepherds and start offering our hands to these sheep around us and say, hey, look, there's a better way. Watch. Let's do this. Doesn't that look better? Doesn't that feel better? Because when you got freedom in your heart, what's freedom? It's unstoppable.
Chris, earlier you made reference to holding these politicians accountable. United Freedom Party, how would you change that? How would you put a system in place that would hold the elected politicians accountable?
The only way to stop corruption is to not give them any power. There's no other way. And we impose on the United Freedom Party a 3% tax. Blanket, that's it. And if you pull resources, lumber, timber, or natural resources out of the ground, 3% goes into a fund that we all get a check, like they do in Alaska, because those are natural resources that we should share. So after we put the Freedom Party in, you're an administrator and you don't need to vote anymore. Would this world be better? Would you be safe? Yes, the police are still there. But a man or a woman has to file a complaint. The police can't run around looking for problems. Now people said, well, that's, you know, for whatever reason, oh, now the police. The minute you allow the police or the state to start charging you, you're doomed.
So that begs the question, though, who does make the decisions and how?
Well, that's why we wrote them down. And those are the things. Because anything that comes up in between is going to be an issue between a man or a woman. That harm can be settled in the court.
Allow me to give you perhaps a lead into this, something I've been saying to people for a long time, and I think it will resonate with both of you. A liberal is someone who believes society is responsible for the individual. A conservative is someone who believes the individual is responsible for society.
Yes. Yes. I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, obviously you can't ever subvert the rights of the individual for the betterment of the greater good. I mean, that's just a slippery slope to the nonsense that we're in. And again, when it comes to accountability, you know, whether we're talking on the corporate side or the political side, yeah, we're just replacing politics in the political class with leadership and community. You know, I lived in a small town in Europe, you know, and we owned a lot of our own problems. When somebody was misbehaving, we might dump them, pick them up, and put them in the fountain. And if they really continued, we might walk them right out of town. If they continued again, then we'd say, you're not welcome back in our town.
Let me say from the outset that Luke Dennis and Chris Hampton are the worst spokesmen for freedom I've ever run across. Ever. Were it not for the fact that they registered a political party in Alberta bearing the words Freedom Party, something that might be associated with Ontario's officially registered Freedom Party, I would never have given them a second thought. But as the president and founding member of Ontario's Freedom Party, I do not want to be associated with a single thing these incoherent blatherers were spewing. And if that sounds harsh, they earned it. Said host Will Dove, I've interviewed a number of leaders of new conservative parties, from Maxime Bernier to Pastor Art Pawlowski to Preston Manning and Brian Peckford. None have given as much thought to the problems of the country as our guest today. What? When he introduced his guests with that statement, I had high expectations, and what they had to offer turned out to be an insult to Bernier, Pawlowski, Manning, and Peckford. They were utterly incoherent. And even in compiling the audio bites for today's Just Right, I found it difficult to be able to even put a coherent sentence together that conveyed any complete thought at all. What I found particularly disturbing was that the host and his guests self-described themselves as, quote, extreme right-wing Christian conservatives, end quote, yet every statement uttered by them was about anarchy, libertarianism, and socialistic redistribution of wealth. An across-the-board 3% tax? A tax from which checks will be issued to citizens because we all share natural resources? Are you kidding? So let's begin with their definition of freedom, and we'll hold off on our own correct definitions until the close of the show. How do you define freedom, they were asked, and they respond, gee, that's a big question. And eventually, after repeating themselves several times, their ultimate definition boiled down to the ability to act as you choose, as long as you do no harm to others or to the environment. Well, what if someone wanted to do something that did no harm to others or to the environment, but didn't have the ability to do so, either due to a physical impairment or not having the resources necessary? Does that mean then that society must enable that person to be able to do whatever is in question? And no harm to the environment? The environment can be defined in an infinite number of ways, and the environment has no rights that override the rights of human individuals. There is a whole movement out there that insists the production of CO2 is harmful to the environment. Everything from cows to human beings are harmful to the environment. And what about the Uber taxi driver who wants to earn a living, but municipal taxi monopolies argue that competition from this industry is harming their profits and their businesses? And that may well be true. All competition has a potential for harm to those who cannot compete as successfully as others. And what about misgendering some mentally ill individual who claims that referring to him or her as a member of their actual sex is harmful? Simply speaking the truth is harmful to all kinds of liars. What about all of the people who are arguing that words and free expression are harmful in and of themselves? The way that this definition was worded has a kind of a permission tone to it. You know, the ability to act presupposes a physical condition, as opposed to the freedom to act, which is a political condition. And as long as you do no harm to others or the environment, who decides what the nature of the harm is? This expression of freedom completely justifies the crony world of politics. There are always businesses and enterprises who regard the allowance of free market conditions to harm their share of the market or harm the level of their profits. And how does one harm the environment? It's not possible to do any oil exploration or mining without quote-unquote harming the environment, in the sense that it must be changed or altered. Same principle with farming and forestry. The statement is designed to appeal to a left-wing mentality and is in the language of the left, harm to others, the environment. How quickly we forget. The do-no-harm argument was the key to the whole COVID scam, the climate change fiction, and the United Freedom Party scam, it seems. Luke Dennis and Chris Hampton used the term harm to others so many times during their interview it sounded like Joe Biden repeating the word democracy 75 times during a single speech. But the issue of harm is utterly unrelated to any definition of freedom. So be sure to get your vax and wear your mask, because if you don't, it might harm grandma. This whole thing sounds like a statement crafted by the World Health Organization or Klaus Schwab. A major question that begs asking about a political party called the United Freedom Party is why, given that unity and solidarity is the number one priority of the party, they bothered to found the party in the first place, given that most of the other quote-unquote new conservative parties in Alberta all tout the same mantra. Unity and solidarity. Hello, Arthur Pawlowski. We really like that your party is all about unity and solidarity, so we formed our own separate political party called the United Freedom Party. Wow. What began as a philosophical train wreck soon morphed into a philosophical holocaust.
Well, let's say you've got a town is 100 miles from a major city, and the road between the towns is degraded to the point where it needs to be repaved. Who makes the decision that that needs to be done?
Well, I mean, I think initially, ultimately, again, the community, the individuals, the human beings, the men, the women, they're going to be the ones that are going to identify a need. So whether it's a road or whether it's a community program, whatever it is that they need. And as we're suggesting, the private market is always going to be the go-to for a solution. Who knows? That's an interesting question on the larger side. I think ultimately you can still find a private solution for that. You're going to find somebody who's going to be able to put that road together, pay for it. The administrators in the government can help to corral these needs together, can help to corral some options. And unlike these days where there's always private agendas and old people lining their pockets and governments are paying two or three or four times the market rate for regular goings on. If you hired a contractor for a bathroom renovation, every year he came back to just ask you for more money and more money and more money and these problems, you'd go bankrupt first of all, you'd never hire that contractor. But that's the way the government solves all of our problems. Again, you have the court systems to protect against any harm. So if there's any legitimate harm going on, then, you know, that's another story. If that contractor's taking advantage, if the work isn't done up to snuff, so be it, they're fired. We have another one come in. Right now, as we speak, I believe Derek Bros is hosting the fifth Greater Reset. And there's a lot of the top freedom-minded individuals and speakers every year hustling down there. You know, from the, you know, libertarian sector, the, you know, yellow and black sort of anarchist types of ideas. You talk about anarchy. Anarchy is without rulers is the real definition of that term. And it's not chaos. However, you know, without rulers means we rule and are responsible for ourselves. Look, if we're going to wait for these people and their solutions, the order that they're bringing out of this chaos, when Luke says, you know, I don't know how it's holding together. Well, I think they're holding it together with all the kinds of, you know, magic hoot nanny, just so that, of course, they can pull the rug out at the moment when they deem it most, you know, beneficial for themselves. I got a question for us. I mean, why does the world feel that it's such a crazy idea to form a new country, a new house? Everybody's got a right to their own house. And as I say, from the people that are gathering right now in Latin America to, you know, the people living in Latin America, living in Europe, living here in the Americas, anywhere on the planet, there are millions upon millions upon millions of people that would agree with us. And if we would move and vote with our feet and our wallets and our hands and our hearts and everything we've got to support one another, we could pick a few different houses. Maybe Alberta's the best place in Canada, and that's why we're starting here. But as we say, the United Freedom Party's message, mandates, models, everything that we're talking about are universally applicable. You can pick your spot in Europe. You can pick your spot in Latin America, and let's get her done. New borders, new possibilities. We deserve a house of our own. How are we going to wake people up? And I think, you know, like you're talking about, you know, politics is definitely downstream of culture. So we got to strengthen the individual. We got to strengthen the family. Hence, our communities are going to get better in the politics, of course. And every generation has the same stories, says the storyteller, the same lessons that we need to be teaching. And maybe it's on us as the teachers and the storytellers above all else. However, it's a responsibility for the entire culture, every generation to educate the young. So, you know, I mean, grabbing a hold of education back from the state, first of all, is going to be a big step in the right direction. I think already with homeschooling, unschooling, you know, we talked a lot about that in the book. I'm still a huge proponent. I love the energy and the momentum that way. You talked about your own efforts in the, coming up in the next year on education with respect to rights and how important these things are. Yes, we need to educate people. Yes, we're going to be able to bring more sheep along in so doing. However, as Luke is suggesting, the buck stops here. You don't like it? Get the fuck out. We cannot wait to wake up more. That is folly. What we need is generalship, clear direction from shepherds, and the sheep will follow. Which is, let's remember that we don't need their bloody permission. We don't need it any more than we need the Trudeau's. What we need is the cojones to stand up, say, this is wrong. I'm gonna go left. I'm going to go right. Who's with me? And around the planet right now, we need to vote with our feet and our hands. And we could double the population of Alberta. Let's be pointed. Think about that, folks. If we got 4 million people, 3 million, doesn't matter. We could 4 million new freedom-loving people in Alberta. Hello, it's our house. These are the rules. If you don't like it, get up.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. You know, self-rule is an oxymoronic, contradictory term. Any concept of rule is about ruling the conduct of others, even if it's just a rule written down on a piece of paper. The fact that you are making a free choice does not mean that you are ruling yourself. The very notion is ridiculous, like the folks who like to say that they're practicing self-censorship. No, they're not. They're making a choice. Censorship is about censoring the free expression of others. And nothing in the world is being held together by magic hootenanny. Oh my God. They talk about private education, but we have to educate the sheep, and if you don't like it, get the F out. We're going to follow the Biden plan and let 4 million people into the province, and if you don't like it, get out. What a fascist dictator. And you can bet that all of those invaders will be expecting their checks from the 3% across the board tax levied to get their fair share of the province's natural resources. Based on what possible principle? These guys were incapable of answering a single question, from the definition of freedom to who shall pay for the roads. Who's responsible for the roads? Whoever owns them, for heaven's sakes. And in one breath, they say that the private market is the only answer, while in the second breath, they say that the private market cannot be trusted. Why does the world feel that it's such a crazy idea to form a new country? Because it is a crazy idea. It requires setting up all of the institutions and political apparatus that your party says it's against. Then they say, we need generalship, clear direction. We must become shepherds and the sheep will follow. So now they're talking in militaristic terms, using the term shepherds to disguise their control and rule of others. And it only gets worse.
Not long ago, I interviewed David Parker, the founder of Take Back Alberta, and I approached David for an interview largely on the basis of a statement that he made in a speech I heard him give up near Edmonton last spring. And he said, every time our governments go off the rails, we get all these new political parties forming. And very often they're well-intentioned people. Some cases they even have really good answers to the problems, like you guys do. But he said there's a problem. They never get elected. What's your response to that?
Well, like I said at the beginning, this might be an idea that sits on the internet till it all collapses, and enough smart people go, okay, well, let's go this way instead of trying to rebuild this nonsense that collapsed. That might be the thing. Maybe we don't get elected.
The United Freedom Party was chosen with this issue and conundrum in mind, in large part because, as you say, there are lots of great... I mean, I really, really admire Pastor Artur Pavlovsky. I go to his church. It's where I met Christopher Wedick of the Mind Shift Studios, as well as the Mind Shift show that we recently interviewed on. I really enjoy listening to his sermons from a Christian perspective. I really like his views politically as just a man on this earth. And I admire the work that he did. I think it's unprecedented, the amount of support. He was able to put a political party together and get representation in all the ridings to get himself into that last election in 10 days flat, which as far as I know is unheard of in Canada. So if that doesn't set a precedent for possibility, first of all, in direct answer to your question, I think there is a real possibility that we could get elected. As I said to you before, we could easily double the population of Alberta in a very few. They're talking about bringing in just in 2024, what is it, almost 1.5 million new people. What if we did that ourselves on a proper scale, just started a call out around the planet and said, come here, I don't care what you do and what the rules are, just get your butt here. We can live in our basement. Now we're not talking about, you know, people that are, you know, you wouldn't want in your basement. You're talking about people you'd be happy to have, you know, and families coming, everybody coming. And then at the end of the day, I think that we need, like Pastor Artur is talking about all the time, and that's why he named his party the Solidarity Party. He said that in Poland, they failed the first time, they failed the second time. The only way they were able to kick, Kekistocracy out was this solidarity. Every group of people, like the old quote, first they came for these people, then they came. If we don't know that we need to stand up together, if we're going to fight this, win this war, then, you know, that's number one. So I think the United Freedom Party is here to, whether it's the Maverick Party on the federal side, whether it's political movements down in the U.S., we have ways where we can join together. And that is part of the mandate of the United Freedom Party.
Let's assume you don't get elected. But these very ideas have an influence on the thoughts of the people, the political landscape. And at least my viewers know that this war we're in, this attack we're under from the globalists, it's a long way from over. They got a lot of plans for us yet.
Well, this is 1,000 years in the making.
Right. So what would be your hope from these ideas, even if it wasn't necessarily just, you know, the United Freedom Party itself, just these ideas, getting these ideas out there into our society, what would be your hope that people would take from that in order to be able to stand up for their rights and freedoms, to be accountable to their society, to build freedom? What changes would you like to see among the people come out of these ideas that you guys have?
Assuming that we don't build a new house.
Assuming we can't build a new house. Assuming we can't change the status quo. We have to live with the kind of system we've got. But at least maybe we can change the minds of the people, at least some of them.
Well, for sure. And hopefully anybody watching this would start to think, hey, you know what, that would be a good idea. And those are the people we want to talk to. And like Chris said, the rest of the people who are on the fence, once they see it implemented, if it ever did, they would see how amazing it would be. It would be overnight. The amount of income and the amount of business that would be attracted, the amount of people like-minded around the world who would want to put, like people are leaving California every day to go to Texas and other places that are more free, right? So people do move and do like good ideas. But, you know, going back to a little bit before about being elected, well, we just elected a conservative government, right? What has she done? Well, let's be serious. Nothing's changed. I mean, really, is she standing up against the World Economic Forum? Is that party saying, hey, we're not allowing these gun laws that just been, you know, no. They're not standing up to the nonsense that's going on right in real time right now.
Where is it going? What could it look like? And are we getting in the way of, let's say, some Christian values? Because I really, you know, not just personally adhere to this sort of worldview and spiritual life, but, you know, I really admire and like the work of Andrew Torba, the founder of Gab. And I know that there's a lot of people throughout the U.S., you know, like the comedian Owen Benjamin and his work, you know, his Bear Terrier there in Ozarks, and however cultish that may seem to some people, there's a lot of, I think what you're asking also is pointing to the strength that has already been, you know, when I say freedom's on the march, I think that this has been going on now for decades, where Luke and I were, you know, waking up, writing stories, trying to tell people. Everybody was waking up. The internet has woken this third revolution information, this Aquarian age. The truth is coming out so furiously. Most people are left with this exact same question that we're talking about all day, was, well, what can I do about it? What's the truth of the world? I don't know. What does freedom look like? I think I know. Okay, so what do I do about that? Everything. We don't have to wait for permission. We don't have to ask anybody. We just have to stand up together, you and I, and say, you know what? How about we make a trade? We're going to start using this as our currency. We could make something up. It doesn't matter. Fiat currencies, currency replacement, parallel economies, and action on all fronts. From health and food is obviously the first, because people tend to starve. And it's one of the first places that we see people pushing back. I love that. But you can trace that back to the original organic push being, you know, predominant in sort of this freedom movement over the last 40, 50 years. So there's lots of steps that we take individually. There's lots of steps we take collectively and locally, but I think we have to take it to the next natural step, which is joining hands globally and starting to vote a little more furiously in all of the known time-honored ways that we're discussing, from education on down the line. Educating the next generation, standing firm, going to these events together, not caring. Let's just build something new. They can't stop us. You know, for real freedom is uncensorable, unstoppable, and unchains our real potential. It is literally unstoppable.
Bill Gates, in a TED Talk, said, this new vaccine rollout should kill 15% of the population. That man should have been murdered and ripped apart on stage. That guy is a piece of garbage.
As much as I may also believe that Gates is a piece of garbage, to call for his murder in those words and being ripped apart on stage is an unconscionable suggestion, especially for a spokesman for a political party expecting to be taken seriously. Obviously, a justice system and due process are not in the playbook of the UFP. These guys are in a complete la-la land, and I have reached the point where I'm coming to believe that they might be representatives of a government-sponsored psyop. Here's a guy who says he admires Artur Pulauski, who was capable of putting a political party together in 10 days with full representation on the ballot, and then has the gall to say that he set up a competing political party so that they can all join together. That's a total contradiction and a direct means of undermining Pulauski's party. What a hypocrite. What a backstabber. Then they say, how to hold politicians accountable. Don't give them any power. There's no other way. And then they call for more furious voting. For who? For politicians that have no power to change anything? Do these guys even understand what a political party is? It's a means of voting people into power so they can actually do and change things. So before we run out of time or I go out of my mind listening to these psyopers, here are some basic truths about freedom. Yes, it's true that no one has ever voted for freedom. But here's a newsflash for you. No one has ever voted for tyranny either. That's not how it works, or what freedom or tyranny are. Freedom is not a commodity to be sold or traded in the marketplace, including in the political marketplace. Freedom is a condition that arises only when very certain, very specific political conditions are met. Ayn Rand defined freedom in a political context as having only one meaning, the absence of physical coercion. And as we pointed out in our own show, number 798, on some inconvenient truths about freedom, for most people in the Western world, freedom has been taken as a given. Their ability to do so depended upon a fundamental moral principle held in common, one that Professor of Moral Philosophy John McMurray described as the law of freedom. No man can compass his own freedom for himself, Warren McMurray, in his 1949 book, Conditions of Freedom. He must accept it as a free gift from others, and if they will not give it to him, he cannot have it. This is the law of freedom. The palpable loss of freedom now experienced on a global scale makes visible an inconvenient truth about freedom that few wish to address, but upon which McMurray conveniently elaborated. We flatter ourselves too much when we imagine that we love freedom and strive wholeheartedly towards freedom. On the contrary, there are few things that we fear so much. No doubt we find the idea of freedom attractive, but the reality is another matter. For to act freely is to take a decision and accept the consequences. I see history in its concrete reality, not as man's struggle to win his freedom in a world that frustrates his efforts, but as a record of the twists and evasions by which men seek to escape from freedom in a world which thrusts it remorselessly upon them. In other words, the inconvenient truth about freedom is that most people don't want it. And that leaves those who do want freedom obligated to take the initiative by getting involved in politics, both on principle and as guardians committed to the eternal vigilance required in a free society. So, creating the condition of freedom depends upon the following ingredients. In metaphysics, reality is the standard, which means accepting that existence exists despite anyone's subjective belief otherwise. In epistemology, it's the acceptance that reason is the only means by which man acquires valid knowledge based on a set of objective and unchanging definitions that have a corresponding identity in reality. In ethics, it's about the morality of rational self-interest. In politics, it's the principle of consent, which has been the most violated principle during the last several years of our tyranny. And just as you can't vote for freedom, you can't vote for tyranny. These are conditions that arise based on the concrete values and policies that people do vote for. For example, if you vote for some kind of measure of censorship, that's a step towards tyranny. If you vote for the establishment of individual rights, that's a step towards freedom. If you vote for higher taxes, that's a step towards tyranny. If you vote for lower taxes, that's a step towards freedom. Freedom didn't just vanish overnight, any more than it appeared overnight. Suddenly you just wake up one day to discover that those freedoms you took for granted yesterday no longer exist today. And of course, we've only scratched the surface when it comes to identifying all of the various elements that lead to either the conditions of freedom or tyranny. But here's the sure bet. If you vote for the United Freedom Party of Alberta, that would be a giant step towards tyranny. If you vote for the Freedom Party of Ontario, that would be a giant step towards freedom. And of course, another great step towards freedom would be to vote to join us again next week when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
My parents are pretty old. They're in their 40s now. Yeah, they're always telling me how easy I have it. They're like, oh, your generation's great. You don't know how hard it was to be a kid when we were kids. Why can't you be more like we were? Maybe because most of the crap you did when you were kids is illegal now. I cannot walk to 7-Eleven and buy my grandparents cigarettes. I'm not allowed to hitchhike. I can't drink from a garden hose. I can't play with lawn darts, which were banned in 1988. I have my own set of challenges. When I ride my bike, I have to wear half a bowling ball on my head, because safety's a thing now. I didn't have an iPhone my whole life, you know. For many years, I had to use a flip phone. You had to press a button 3 times to type the letter C. Just sipping my water. When my parents were kids, when they left the house, it was just, all right, see ya, be back by dark, don't get abducted, molested, or eaten, and have fun. But if I want to go anywhere, I have to carry a whistle and a binder of all nearby registered sex offenders. And it's really thick. Lots of gym teachers and priests. I'm kidding. Guys, I was just a joke. The priests aren't registered. Just relocated.